Welcome to New Human Living Radio Show, bringing you powerful interviews to awaken the power in you. Learn more at newhumanliving.com. And now your host, Les Jensen.
Hello and welcome to the show tonight. I'm so glad you joined us. Tonight we're going to talk about karma and politics. You know, I'm so fascinated by both of those, actually, karma and politics. And when I consider the two of them together, it just makes me smile. I don't know why, but it's a most curious thing. You know, we're all observing, we're all watching this collective storyline play out in our society, in our culture. And we're in America here, we're coming up on the 2016 elections for the esteemed position of President of the United States. And when we look at the candidates' posture and try to position themselves so early on in the game to find favor in the American public's eye, it's most curious to watch what they're touting as, quote, positive attributes that entitle them or make them a more preferred candidate for such a position. But when we talk about karma and politics, you know, it's when we look at where we are collectively, from my eyes, I've been teaching karma for quite a while, and from my eyes, there's a collective awakening that's happening with people all over the world. And the same old is not going to go over like it did in the past. The position of the candidates cannot be what it was in the past and still find favor with the American public. But let's delve into this and take a look at the idea of karma and politics. We're going to start off with talking about karma, and then we'll fold it into the political arena. And then from that vantage point, we should have some ideas of what a candidate could look like that would embrace the American public in a way that supports a positive karmic outcome for our collective experience from the political platform. Politics does not define, it isn't the end game of how we experience life. It's a subset, it's a element within a collective that influences us collectively, but it is not the dictator of how we experience life or our own personal karma. So let's take a look at karma. A friend of mine online went to MIT and graduated, a very esteemed college. And I asked him, did you take any classes about karma? And he said, I think karma was touched on in religious studies. And I find that quite curious because when I talk about karma, I could just as easily say we're talking about human potential. You're a human, I'm a human. maybe there's a dog in the room and it's not human, but we're here in this conversation, you and I, and we each have our own karmic propensities, our karmic probabilities. Karma is like a momentum, kind of like a subconscious preference. And when my friend said that if he had karma, it would have been taught in religious studies, I have to laugh about that because some religions are karmic train wrecks. Some religions are karmic catastrophes in the sense that they take you away from the truth. They take you away from your personal power. They disconnect you from a clear understanding. And so the idea that karma is taught as religious studies would be similar to saying economics is taught by the mob. What's yours is mine. Any questions? The idea that the mob would teach economics is preposterous. Well, sure, it could happen. You could get a classroom and give a class a name and bring them in, and they could say whatever they wanted, and it's a possibility in this realm of infinite possibilities. But I suggest to you, if karma was taught on college campuses, just imagine the average college campus in your mind, and there's all these buildings, and each building has a topic. There's the mathematics, engineering, physics, economics, etc. I would suggest to you, if karma was actually taught, and it absolutely should be, I would suggest the karma building would be larger than any other building on campus. And what am I using the size of the building as a representation of here? If karma was taught on a college campus, it would be far and above the largest building. Another way to say that would be the most prominent subject possible. And why do I say that? Well, karma is working directly with one thing: human potential. Human potential. We talked about karma being a propensity or a momentum, a preference as to how we experience our life. And if we observe society as an outside observer, we can see millions and even billions of human beings waking up in the morning, going through their day on this beautiful planet Earth, and going to sleep at night. But yet if we take the stories, the paradigms that all these human beings are experiencing, and we play them out in a poster or maybe a collage, we can see an extreme diversity in how human beings are experiencing this thing called life. Human consciousness, your consciousness now. If you are unconscious, you could not hear what I'm saying now. It takes consciousness to be conscious of what is happening, to be conscious of information in words. If we were to take a snapshot of the storylines playing out in our human condition now, they would vary so dramatically. Perhaps there's a homeless vet at the corner with PTSD, with a cup out, looking for some money so he can have some food. Or maybe it's a CEO like Elon Musk who's changing the face of industry with ideas he's bringing to market. And those two extremes right there show us the diversity of what's possible in our human condition. And in this moment, I'm talking about our human condition from an individual point of view. Here you are, here I am, and we're talking about our human potential and how karma influences that. Well, if we were to look at the extremes that we just talked about there, every single country on the planet, every single country has human consciousness as a resource, as a very powerful resource. I suggest you, human consciousness is the most powerful substance on the planet. Look at the past history of humanity. Look at all the accomplishments. And every single accomplishment started as an idea in human consciousness, started as an idea in the mind of a human being. So when we talk about karma, we're talking about the potential of ourselves, individually and collectively. We're talking about the potential of our country, individually and collectively. And although we're talking about the American political arena with this show, this could apply to any country on the planet. The mechanism of karma is indifferent to the country in which that karma is playing out on. So when we talk about karma, and we're going to fold this into the political arena towards the second half of the show. When we talk about karma, we're talking about our human potential. If you look at the storyline of our human, of our American history, we've done some very incredible things. There's the speech by John F. Kennedy in the early 60s, inspiring the country to take on the challenge of going to the moon and back by the end of the decade. And sure enough, Neil Armstrong stepped down on the surface of the moon inside that decade. We accomplished it. You can look at difficult eras we've gone through, world wars, depressions, recessions. And so often we have come back with a roar, with such strength, with such determination. And that potential always, always exists within us. It cannot be erased unless we ourselves quit believing in ourselves. Our human potential is always there to be reclaimed. It cannot be destroyed. It cannot be touched because it's a truth that exists forever. So our human consciousness is such a powerful resource, such a powerful attribute to us as citizens. We're talking about a political process here. It's us as citizens that hold the potential of what is possible in our future. When I think of the example of John F. Kennedy giving that speech, inspiring the American people, imagine a candidate that had a vision for the future that was so inspiring so powerful that every single human being would get behind it with a sense of passion and with a sense of purpose. That's taking human consciousness and literally sculpting it as a focused point of presence, defining a future that we can all get behind. So to look at karma a little closer, we can look at, I always like to, when I'm contemplating the future, I always like to look at what would perfection be? Perfection is kind of a sharp word. What would an ideal future be? What would even heaven on earth look like? In other words, erase for a moment, let go of, start with a clean sheet of paper, and conjure up in our mind, in our imagination, what a prosperous, healthy, vibrant, and happy future for mankind would look like. When I see people that are genuinely happy, genuinely fulfilled, genuinely satisfied in their life, they're fulfilling their potential. They're fulfilling their passion, their own personal passion for what they prefer. You can take the idea of enlightenment, the idea that we've cleansed our karma and we're all fully empowered from a place of knowing who we are. And the reason I say knowing who we are is that when you know who you are, you have nothing to prove. It's like the lion and the idea of it ever worrying or fretting about who it is. The lion is a good example of healthy power because it has nothing to prove. It has nothing to prove in the sense that it knows who it is. So when we look at the future of humanity in an ideal point of view, we can imagine that the citizen feels empowered. And when I say empowered, I'm talking about a very healthy empowerment here. When we look at our culture now and we see people who are vibrant and alive, fulfilling the vision of their heart and their soul, that could be the baseline of who we are as a people in every single country on the planet. That idea, I didn't snap it into any genre, I left it open. Human beings passionately expressing the inspiration of their own heart and soul, where you wake up in the morning and you fulfill your passion as you choose. So when we talk about that, this is a clean piece of paper. We're daydreaming what a healthy, happy environment would look like. And why are we doing this? I mean, what value does it have for us to mentally comprehend the idea of a healthy future, a healthy, a happy, a prosperous, a safe, a peaceful future for humanity? Well, when we get clear about what that looks like, that can be a measuring stick. It can be a point of reference that we hold ideas up against, and the value of the idea becomes more evident when we compare it to what a healthy, future looks like. So when we imagine getting up in the morning and engaging our passion, living in a prosperous and an abundant universe, we have all the food we need. We have all the resources we need. Food and resources are not in our minds because we are easily self-sustained. And that could be a whole conversation right there. When the pettiness of what we struggle with sometimes, if that was erased from our mindset and we were to actually genuinely focus on what we prefer in a passionate and excited expression, we would get up in the morning, we would eat food that's good for us, we would drink water that's good for us, we would engage in our own individual passions and express the inspiration of our soul. So when we look at that as kind of the measuring stick as what is possible in our human condition, paying no never mind to what the condition is now, then we can take that and look at what is being presented to us, what is being offered to us, and weigh that and get an idea if it's genuinely going to move us towards that ideal future. The idea of personal sovereignty and the Constitution of the United States of America pegged this so well, that every human being has unalienable rights. We are born with this inherency. It's something that is inherent to who we are. It's not given as a permission. Nobody else controls it. It's inherent. It's inherent to us as human beings. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I suggest in that equation is personal sovereignty. Personal sovereignty to express the pursuit of what fulfills you, the pursuit of happiness. Now I'm going to tangent a little bit and talk about some of the karmic dogma that the collective society has now, the karmic dogma of our culture. And as a side note, you entrepreneurs, there's trillions of dollars of opportunity to create arenas that are more harmonious with our own personal sovereignty. In other words, as we talk about some of these karmic mechanisms, the dogmas that are instilled in our collective experience now, make no mistake, every single arena that we're talking about has a huge, huge potential for opportunity, flat out raw opportunity, decades and decades of fulfillment through you as an entrepreneur, bringing a new idea, a new vision into the collective experience as a platform, as an expression of who you are. So let's talk about these, and you're going to get an idea as we just cover a couple of these. I'm going to talk about the idea of a monolithic structure. We're talking about karma here and karma in the collective. Monolithic structures. Karma, karma, karma. Okay, we're human beings and we're experiencing karma. Well, what the hell does that mean? when we talk about collective karma, we're talking about ideas, structures, forms that we connect with and become attached to karmically, and then what happens to those ideas, those symbols, those forms, those structures, what happens to those structures karmically takes us all along for the ride. You can think a real simple example is war. The political powers that be say, you're not giving us what we want, we have different expectations. Whatever the motivation of war is incidental to the idea that when the signal is given to go, vast amounts of people create machines of killing and they travel all over the globe and kill each other. I'm not interested in the reason why. I'm looking at the collective karmic experience. So there's the soldiers that actually go out into the battlefield. My dad was one of those in World War II. And the war happens. There's such enormous karmic scarring that happens in the act of war. And that ripples back home. Mothers worried about their sons and daughters, fathers as well, brothers, sisters. Wars karmically scar us at a very deep level. And I use war in this example to show you that it's an idea, a collective agreement, if you will. Well, we are citizens of this country, and we have this idea or expectation or need or want or whatever motivates a war. It's really quite trivial compared to the mechanism itself. And the other side of the equation are groups of people that have associated with their collective agreement. So when I talk about monolithic structure, I'm talking about vast numbers of people that are tied together through a common idea or element or symbol. So let's just take a quick snapshot of our culture today. If you watch the Wall Street tycoons buy up industries and collapse choices for the collective, you're seeing monolithic structures being formed right before your eyes. Let's take an example of this. When I was a kid, there were many different gas stations. We're talking about the energy industry, a multi-billion dollar industry that is subsidized by billions of dollars a year. There were so many different gas companies. There were many, many ma and pa gas stations all across the country. And they all dried up. There's very few of those still out there. For the most part, they've been put out of business for whatever reason, bought out of business for whatever reason, and now we have just a few huge oil companies. So what's oil to us? Let's look at this karmically. Do you have a car in your garage? Do you need that car to have a job? Do you need that car to go get groceries? Do you need that car to go on vacation or go to the hospital in an emergency or? When there's mergers over and over and over again, making fewer and fewer choices. In the past, there were hundreds of oil companies, and now there's just handfuls. So collectively, that's a karmic experience because we're getting into a monolithic structure here. Just look at the idea of monolithic as many people attached to a single or just a few organizations, structures, ideas, etc. What I gave as an example is oil. A ginormically huge karmic, I guess I could say catastrophe, is our idea of money. Oh my God. A single symbol. Uno. One. A single symbol. In America, it's the dollar. Money is a symbol, a symbolic expression. So there's this idea of a dollar. And we hang everything around the dollar. What kind of a house will you buy? What kind of a school will you go to? What kind of a car will you drive? Where will you live? Where will you go on vacation? What kind of food can you afford? This idea of a single symbol, uno, one symbol, that we've attached because of the nature of the system, such core fundamentals, where we live, what we can afford. We hang so much of our personal life on this symbol of money. And then the insane part about it is we literally gamble as to what the value of that symbol is. That's insanity. No, wait. That's the everyday, that's the only mechanism of our economy right now. This ginormously monolithic single symbol, one, and every single person, not every single, some people are completely detached from money, but for the most part, hundreds of millions and billions of people are attached to this symbol of money, and then we gamble at what its value is. That's insanity. Karmically, that's a train wreck. So all we have to do is look at recessions like in 2008. In 2008, the banking industry leveraged hundreds of billions of dollars out of our hands. And then we turn around, we fine them $5 billion. So a thief takes $100 billion. And we say, well, what you did is bad. We're going to fine you $5 billion. Doesn't that leave the thief $95 billion? These are just ideas. And those scoundrels are not in jail. They can turn around and do it again. In that scenario, crime pays. 2008 was a tidal wave of economic torment on the American people. And the mechanism that brought that about is still in place, and people actually made an enormous amount of money off of that. Single symbol, and we're all attached to it. Karmically, that's so black and white as a collective experience. And I could go on and on with, like, for myself, I've worked in broadcast television for 30 years, there was 50 or 60 media companies easily when I first started, and now there's about 5 or 6 moving towards monolithic structures. So karmically, what we're doing here is we're looking at the landscape of our karmic condition now. And what we're seeing here is we're seeing the structure of the system that we're attached to have these monolithic organizations that have been managed to exploit that monolithic stature. And every place I look, it's this pay to play mentality. Pay to play. I'll give you another example. And this isn't very mainstream, and I don't expect people to perhaps get this on the first round, but I'm going to say it anyway. So, a television transmitter. I've worked in broadcast television, so we broadcast a television signal. You go to the store, you buy a TV, you stick an antenna in the air, and poof, pictures show up. Well, where do those pictures come from? Well, that's what my industry did. We build transmitters, and we broadcast the signal out into the air. So there's this thing called the spectrum, the radio spectrum that we can broadcast in. Your cell phone has a transmitter and receiver in it. Your Bluetooth has that. Your garage door opener is a transmitter. The spectrum that we use to broadcast in is public domain. It belongs to the people. Well, wait a minute. Yes, it does. It belongs to the people. Well, what about the military? Well, the military is given the permission to use the spectrum from the people. And there's the cell phone industry. There's the mobile phone industry. And right now, the chairman of the FCC is an ex-CEO of Verizon Wireless. Imagine that. And the cell phone industry is buying up spectrum, and the FCC has given it to them, and you're paying for it. Well, what do you mean you're paying for it? Well, when you pay your cell phone bill, you're paying to use something that belongs to you. Well, wait a minute. It takes a lot to build a cell phone network, and they need that money to build the network, and they charge us based on minutes or based on a data plan, and it needs to be that way. No, it doesn't. No. What they have done is they've created a pay-to-play arena. So let's try to make it a little more obvious in the sense that when you own something, you don't have to pay for it. Now, when I talk, I need to clarify that because let's go on with the example. When you start your car, the car starts up. There's an alternator in your car, and it makes electricity, and it runs your radio and the windshield wipers, and it recharges your battery. So the alternator's generating the electricity, and that's your electricity. So what if the power company came in and put a power meter on the alternator of your car and said, every time you run your car, you need to pay us for the power coming out of your alternator because we're providing it to you? That sounds absurd. Imagine writing a check to the alternator power company every time you run your car. I ran my car 27 minutes, and that's X amount of dollars per minute. So here's the money for the electricity that came out of my alternator. See, that sounds ridiculous. And it is ridiculous. But for you to pay data rates and talking time is absurd. I tell you, it's absurd, because the spectrum belongs to the people first and foremost. But this pay-to-play mentality has come in, and they've created a business model that says, well, we're the providers, and therefore you should pay us because we're providing you a service. Well, when I was a kid, we had CB radios, citizen band radios, Breaker 19. And when you bought the radio, you were done, period, end of story. The radio was bought, and then when you keyed it up and talked on it, you radiated into the public spectrum, and the other end could listen to you. But with that model, it's not a pay-to-play. You only pay for the underlying hardware, and then you can use it at will. The media industry, cable companies, AT&T and DirecTV were looking at AT&T was looking at buying DirecTV recently. Two huge monolithic organizations looking to form to create an even bigger platform. The mobile industry is pinching off free public broadcasting. I work in the industry. There's called channel allocation. Repacking the spectrum is what it's called. And they're pinching us smaller and smaller because that spectrum has money to be made because of the business model they set it up on. So why am I talking about all this? I mean, it sounds like I'm nitpicking this structure of the nature of things. Well, I'm an optimist. I have this. I am so in love with our humanity. I'm so in love with our human potential. When I think of the ideal vision of what life can be on this planet, it gets me so damn excited, so happy, so joyful to think of a self-sustaining environment, a self-sustaining culture, a self-sustaining paradigm. Remember earlier in the show, we were daydreaming the idea of waking up in the morning and not thinking about money, not thinking about the pay-to-play mindset. When I look at our humanity, the humans I see living out their lives, I see a lot of heartache. I see a lot of struggle. I see a lot of despair. People are having a tough time making ends meet. The idea of owning a home is out of the question to some. The idea of having their own roof over their head is out of the question, even if it's renting. Our collective paradigm is loaded with some pretty tough karma. And I suggest to you that compassionate hearts are what you should look for in a political candidate. Let's talk about politics. The politics of dancing. The politics of our culture. The most powerful thing we have is ourselves. Human consciousness is untouchable by a product or a device, because any product or device is a byproduct of human consciousness. It's a creation of human consciousness. And I can come up with a brilliant idea now, and now it's a moment later, I can come up with another brilliant idea. If I make a thing, no matter what that thing is, it's a single idea. But human consciousness is the potential of a tireless stream of inspiration. I don't think we should be looking at politicians to be the source of the solution. I think it's us, the human beings, you and me, collectively, individually, honoring our power. You're a very powerful being having a human experience. I know that to be the truth of you. You have power in you that is timeless, that is unquenchable. You can go to the well over and over and over again and be inspired over and over and over again and take action on that inspiration infinitum and without end. And there's hundreds of millions of us. There's billions of us all over the planet. So when I say look for a compassionate heart in a politician, what the hell is that about? We've talked so much about karma. Karma. We've talked so much about that. What cleanup, aisle five. Karma can be cleansed, can be erased, can be healed from our human condition. And the power tools that fulfill that is compassion and forgiveness. And the third one would be acceptance. When I talk about politics, I want to see a politician that looks at our human condition, that looks at the environment the human beings wake up in when they go about their life, when they go to put fuel in their car, when they go to buy electricity, when they go to pay their cell phone. I want a politician that has a vision that goes beyond this pay-to-play mindset that is so entrenched in our collective. All of these problems, quote problems, unquote, you could think of them as karmic lessons, all of these are easily solvable. There's this idea called nationalization, where we take a paradigm that has been used to extort money from us, and we nationalize it. We turn it over to the people, and we take the profit out of it. We can nationalize industries that have gone astray. They stay in place, they stay functional, but they're turned over to the people where they belong. There's the vision of what it means to have a healthy society. What's the end game we're shooting for here? Profit? Yeah, let's all eat money. Profit in and of itself is not bad. But what's the end game that we're looking for here? What are we looking to accomplish in our human condition? Again, I go to that blank sheet of paper to let go of the idea of what we're seeing in our everyday life and leapfrog over all the problems to capture a vision, capture an idea, capture that inspiration, which is the doorway to all change. From that clean sheet of paper, capture the vision of what a healthy, happy, safe, and prosperous culture looks like. When I grew up, we left the front door open. There was nothing to be afraid of. And of course, in our human consciousness, there's inspiration that can bring that back. What if we take the idea of the symbol of money and flip it over, where money doesn't decide anything about our life, where money doesn't decide anything about our life. That feels so much better than the idea that money decides everything. If money was no object, that's a classic line. If money was no object, what would you do with your life? When we have to think about a symbol, i.e. money, to decide what we can and cannot do, the symbol itself has power in our choices. To be free of that symbol's influence, to be free of that karma of a monolithic symbol embedded in our culture and in our personal arenas, to be free of the karma of that is to flip it over and say, what if money had no influence as to deciding what we could or could not do? That sounds so much better, so much prosperous, fulfilling, satisfying. For us to take the inspiration of who we are, that vision of our heart and our soul, and fulfill it in a passionate way, that's the thing itself. That's human beings living out a fulfilling and satisfying experience. Well, what's going to get us there? What's going to get us to heaven on earth? Following our own inspiration, having compassion and forgiveness for another. Yep, that feels good. That feels right. Well, what's the mechanics of that in the political arena? A politician that sees there can be no success that doesn't include our human experience, that doesn't honor the truth of who we are as human beings. The politician that recognizes the value of our humanity. People are fed up. People are very hungry for a deep-rooted change. There's some candidates in the race that are really stirring the pot, and they're calling a spade and creating quite a stir, thank goodness. The people, the politicians who are playing out the role that are in this race, those that can see past the karma of our collective experience, those that can vision beyond our current paradigm, are not going to be in the mainstream media. You know, in Colorado, we recently had a governor's election. We elected a governor for the state of Colorado. And coming up to the election, I'm watching the media and I'm looking at what the candidates have to offer. And then I get in the voting booth and I find out there were many more people running for governor than I had ever heard about. In other words, there were only a few prominent candidates that had any kind of regular campaign time because so many of them couldn't afford it. Wait. Couldn't afford it. Huh. Is money deciding the visibility of viable candidates? By golly, there's that damn symbol again. I suggest to you the candidates that are bankrolled by the monolithic structures are the ones to avoid. They're there for more of the same. It's going to be candidates that are focused on issues that directly affect our human experience that are going to be the most powerful probabilities of us moving towards a more ideal experience. I don't want to tell you how to vote. Of course not. You have personal sovereignty. Tune into your heart, find compassion in your heart, and from that place of compassion, through your heart, listen to the candidates as they propose what they would do, as they give you their party line. I suggest you, in closing, time flies by, we have nothing to worry about lest we go back to sleep. Human consciousness is waking up at such an incredible rate on this planet, in this country and in other countries. The most powerful substance on the planet, human consciousness, is waking up. There will be change. There will be a move towards a more harmonious existence, a more empowering existence, a more prosperous existence, a more peaceful existence. It's inherent in the desire of our own heart and our soul. I suggest you, power in the future is going to come from the citizen. The last book I wrote, Citizen King, the new age of power. If we were to all claim our own personal power, and honor the inspiration within our own being with action, we would be the change we're looking for. I think the biggest decider of the future is powerful people. Are you ready to be powerful? Are you ready to have bold ideas and take bold actions? If not you, who? It doesn't have to be a struggle. You can be powerful and happy. You can be powerful and satisfied and fulfilled. But you have to honor who you are. I'm so glad you joined us tonight. That's a step towards power right there. I love this planet. I love humanity. And I think we're in for some really wonderful years ahead of us. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'm your host, Les Jensen. Until next time.
This has been a New Human Living radio broadcast. You can raise your own personal power with Personal Power Fundamentals Home Study Course at newhumanliving.com. Thanks for listening.